final day of the World Athletics Championships in London. We're not in London, unfortunately. We're here in South Africa with Dr. Ross Tuck and myself, Mike Finch. Our second last podcast around the World Championships. We've been doing them throughout these World Championships, and it's been great having you all on board and participating and commenting and interacting with us on Twitter. If you want to do that, we are on Twitter at Mike Finch SA is my Twitter handle. Ross is on at Science of Sport, and of course on Runners World SA as well, if you want to tweet us on those sort of things. So a fair amount to talk about. This hasn't been a games or championships where we've been bored with anything, because there's been a lot happening on and off the track. We're going to focus very much today on the great Usain Bolt. I think after last night's very sad end to the 4x100 meters, I think a lot of people are talking about his career as a whole. So we're going to delve a little bit into that and to ask the question, is Bolt the greatest track and field athlete that's ever lived? And I know that Ross has got some opinions about that. We'll talk a little bit about that. And let us know what you think. You know, is he the greatest track and field athlete, or was he just the greatest sprinter? Or neither of those. Yeah, let us know what you think on that. We'll talk a little bit about the average speeds and all that sort of thing that they talk about in 100 meters. And we'll also talk a little bit about some of the funny things happening in the walk at the moment, which we've actually got on our TV behind us. There's two athletes in it from China. One is called Yin and one is called Yang. You can't make that kind of stuff up, but with the walk is always something very interesting. And I heard a very interesting fact this morning from the TV commentator saying, how did the walk start in the UK? And apparently it started from the footman who used to walk next to the carriages, and then looking after the aristocracy carriages. Because they walked a lot, then the aristocracy would say, well, my footman's faster than your footman, and therefore they're going to have a race. So they ended up racing these footmen who were basically doing a lot of training just by doing their jobs, and they ended up having these races, and apparently that's where it started.
Wouldn't that be where running started?
Well, I think carriages
weren't
that fast.
My guy's faster than your guy, but then at what point did they say he's not allowed to run though? He's faster than yours, but he's not allowed to run.
Well, somebody was going on the course and going, okay, I'm going to use a red table tennis bat and tell you when you've got it wrong.
Anyway, maybe they should put some horses next to them and make it more interesting, because I can't watch the walk. I'm sorry.
It is a difficult one. There's no doubt. And apologies to the walkers. I do find my wife was looking at the race walking this morning before we got here, and she was saying, surely it's about faster, higher, stronger. So why are they walking? And we sort of did a bit of investigation and we looked at the history of it. But it is one of those events which walkers who love walking will tell you it's the greatest sport ever. But I think for a lot of us, it's tricky to get your mind around the fact that, in fact, it isn't fast in any way, shape or form. It's kind of, it's a weird way of getting around.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving on. Right, so let's get into last night. I guess the big story was Usain Bolt. I think the British will say the big story was that the British team won the 4x100 meters, but I think for the rest of the world is that Bolt and the Jamaican team didn't. It was a very sad moment, I think, to end one of the greatest athletes that we've ever seen on the track in his career. The controversy that's going around at the moment is that the actual Jamaican team, and Johan Black even mentioning it in the press conference afterwards, as The Guardian reported this morning, saying that the holding room and the core room that they're in before the start of the race, that they were in there for far too long. And I remember watching it last night thinking, goodness me, there's a couple of medal ceremonies happening there. Then you see them coming through and then they're trying to warm up. And apparently that cold room is not warm at all. So the core room, it should be a fairly warm area so the athletes can stay warm. But how much of an effect do you think that would have on an athlete like Usain Bolt? Is it justifiable to say that long wait for him to start might have caused that injury?
Yeah, I think it's possible. Mm. I would point out that Bolt has had chronic hamstring and back issues, and that hamstring tears are the most common injury that a sprinter would have. Mm. So seeing a sprinter do a hamstring is not exactly an earth-shattering thing to see.
Yeah.
So it's possible that it would have happened regardless, but it is surprising to me that they would have spent that long. And I noticed the same thing. I saw they were, because they kept cutting to the warm-up track, and obviously they're trying to fill this time showing Bolt on his farewell tour, waving to fans, having some selfies. Mm. And I remember thinking, like, it's really early for them to be leaving the warm-up area.
Yeah.
So those who don't know, and we have mentioned this before, the athletes typically would warm up starting, like, between 2 and 3 hours before the race. Mm. And then at some point they leave that warm-up track, which you've seen on that television coverage, and they go to the call room where they... It's basically a logistic exercise. Check that the numbers are attached and that the lane markings and so on. And that would be especially the case for a relay, because you've got obviously 32 athletes together. Mm. But then they seem to want to do medal ceremonies and all sorts of things, and 45 minutes is long. So now you're asking a guy to go from zero to maximal effort in 2-3 seconds when potentially he's a little bit cold. And so that's, even if it's not true, it's just a bad look for the IAAF, who have not had a thing go right for them in these world champs, between Gatlin beating Bolt, between norovirus and Makwala and others. It's just, they could not have designed a more bungling end to Bolt's career. So apparently they're going to wheel him out tonight. I saw, did you see a wheelchair come out yesterday?
Yes.
When some guy pushed his little ass, like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. Anyway, he's going to do a lap this evening. I saw somewhere. So that'll be the end. But yes, he wasn't going to win that. They were solidly
third.
Was
he too far? Was he?
Oh, yeah.
No chance?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And because the guys ahead of him were not lucky to be there. Coleman's second in the 100 beat Bolt, and the British guy was even ahead of Coleman. So I didn't think he was doing anything better than third anyway.
Yeah.
But, disappointing end, and saved only by the fact that Britain won it for the fans anyway.
It was a weird moment because you actually heard the crowd. If you're watching live on television, that when they see Bolt pulling up, there's kind of a bit of a hush in the crowd. And then the next minute later, they look and they see that the British team are winning, and suddenly they go erupt again. It's a little bit like they want to be sad that Bolt's not going to finish, but they also want to be happy that their own team has won. It's a cognitive dissonance in a way.
And that's where, like, you've used this word, I think you saw it in an article about athletics, track and field being a 10-pole business where you send Bolt to 10th. That's where his retirement. A lot of people saying bad for the sport, but actually, in a sense, like last night, you've got two guys in teams that are doing better than Jamaica, and no one was watching them. And you're right. I mean, we didn't get the BBC commentary here, not for the first time. I'm thankful, but I'm told that the commentary, they actually just stopped. They were stunned. They said, "What's happened to Bolt?" Well, he was in third.
Yeah.
Like, and there's a really good race going on in front of him, and no one was paying attention.
Yeah.
So,
in
some respects, Bolt moving on maybe spreads the spotlight a little bit more the way it should be spread.
I know we're going to talk a little bit about this tomorrow, about the spread of medals throughout the different nations and in our wrap-up, so stay tuned for that tomorrow. Not a great moment for the IAAF, and I guess a sad way for it to end, just as a lover of track and field. You don't want the greatest athlete that you've seen. I've certainly be able to witness most of his career, and it's been amazing just to be alive at a time to see a guy like that. And to see it end like that is, it really is kind of sad.
Yeah, it is. Though I was thinking a little bit on it this morning, doing some reading ahead of this podcast. In a sense, it's almost not fitting, but there's no doubt now that he should stop.
Yeah.
Whereas it's difficult for a guy to go out at the top because there are questions. Mm. And in hindsight, 2016 after the Olympics should have been the end of it for Bolt, because there was this whole season's been punctuated by is he really going to be Bolt? You know. So to go out with what was basically a physical failure for a guy who was physically, I think, hanging on is probably the best, cleanest, or not cleanest, but the most definitive way to end it. So now it's done.
The end. Yeah. So now the talk is going to be, and a lot of people have suggested this to me, is that make Usain Bolt the greatest track and field athlete of all time? And I think it's important just to address this, and I know that for the athletics pundits, they'll say, well, there's lots of other people and you can't compare the two on the two. But let's start first of all by establishing, is he the greatest sprinter? Who's in the mix there for greatest sprinter of all
time? These conversations are fun in any sport. Who's the greatest footballer ever? Ice hockey for you watching in Canada, quarterback. These are cool conversations. And we should have a pizza and a couple of beers, and then you can have great arguments about this. Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, it's cool.
Yeah.
So track and field.
It's obviously Federer in tennis.
Well, let's talk. we are biased towards recency, and you see that in tennis with Federer and Laver. And it's the same with Bolt. So we're biased because he's the guy for the last 9 years we've seen. But if you go back, I mean, purely statistically now, and we're not talking reputationally or transcending sport and social, cultural. We're not talking scandal because a lot of them have got question marks and so on. We put that out there and we say, purely by numbers, Carl Lewis is probably the only other guy in that picture.
So 8 goals, 1 silver world championship level, 9 golds and 1 silver in the Olympics.
Yeah, and across 4 events, whereas Bolt had 3. So Bolt's 1-2 relay, Lewis was 1-2 relay and long jump. And And I suppose relay also, you have to be a beneficiary of a strong system to win that medal. And it's the same if you think Phelps in the pool. If he's from any other country, okay, probably doesn't exist because they can't produce them. But he's not winning the relay medals because he's reliant on three guys. So that helps both of them a little bit.
Yeah.
But certainly in individual events, Bolt and Lewis stand out by statistically.
Okay.
I guess then you can ask the question in sprinting about who stands out historically. And Jesse Owens is the name probably comes to mind. So 1936 was Hitler's Olympics.
Yeah.
And Jesse Owens was a black sprinter competing in what basically Hitler wanted to showcase Aryan supremacy. And of course he won four medals, 100, 200 long jump, relay, same as Lewis would do many decades later. And Owens also had gone on, I mean, there was a 45-minute period a day in one day the year before where he broke three world records in that 45-minute space. So
it's remarkable to put Bolt against that and to think that can you compare those two performances and Bolt's career versus Jesse Owens' great Olympics?
More in track than any other sport, I reckon, because cycling, we think how much bikes have changed. You know cycling well. Think how much tennis rackets have changed. So how do you compare Laver to McEnroe to Federer? It's impossible because the athletic demand has changed. Whereas in track sprinting, I think it's quite possible to make some comparisons, though imprecise. And so I've seen, for instance, David Epstein has done a TED talk, which you can have a look for. It's, if you look on YouTube, you'll find it. I forget what it's called, but Epstein TED Talk should find it for you. And he's worked with some biomechanists who've told him that if you account for track surfaces, these days it's that super modern tartan,
Mondo
tracks compared to cinder tracks. And I mean, start blocks, they used to take a little shovel and dig them out in the dirt. Yeah. Nowadays, you've got these state-of-the-art, plus the spikes. They reckon that Jesse Owens' times of 1936 would put him in the final of these Olympics right now. So they haven't, you know, they haven't moved that far beyond where Jesse Owens was. So there's some comparison there, but of course, the sport wasn't global in 1936, and that's why, if you extend it to beyond sprinters, and you start saying distance runners, there's a lot of distance athletes who won medals like crazy in the 50s. Paavo Nurmi, Emil Zatopek, in the 70s, Lasse Wierin. But they weren't beating the world because the East Africans hadn't arrived until the mid-60s. So that's where it gets really difficult to make these... That's what's fun.
Well, the names that pop up, obviously, on a sort of track and field across all events, Haile Gebrselassie, you know, the great middle-distance runner. He didn't win as many gold medals, two golds and four golds in the World Championships. And then, of course, Edwin Moses, who we were just looking at this up before we came online, 122 consecutive wins in the 400-meter hurdles. It was the only event that he did, but incredible to think that he never had a one bad day in 122 races.
So then if your criteria for greatness is relative dominance, Moses is number one, because no one's ever done that. And again, Moses isn't going to win a triple at the World Champs, because what's he going to do? 400 hurdles, 400 flat, 800. I mean, no one's done that ever. So Moses, for that, by that criteria, is your guy. So there's different criteria that do it. But, I mean, I think history is best written, and by definition written historically. So what
can only be written historically.
So what Bolt's... exactly. So Bolt's legacy is probably something that will be clearer in 20 years than it is right now. Because those records could still stand. I mean, we don't know. What's the limit to how fast humans can go? And he's that far clear of everyone else that... it could take us 10 generations, or could be one or two.
Well,
so hindsight will tell us.
We were talking now, obviously you can look at Bolt's early career as a 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old. He still held some of the records that he had then in Jamaica, but there are athletes breaking his earlier records when he was 16 years of age. So if you look at linear progression, the idea that there's somebody from Jamaica, even there, that could potentially come through a new Bolt. I mean, is it... does potential at 16-year-old off translate directly into performance as a senior athlete, or is it is there a lot of 16-year-olds that can be great and never achieve anything?
It's extremely imperfect. The efficiency of talent pathways is very low. So Bolt, as you would know, was a 200-400 guy at school. His 400-meter record has been broken. It was 2 years ago, 45.3, I think it was, by a 15-year-old.
Sure.
assuming the age is correct, which is always some fine print.
Yeah.
His 200 record, as far as I know, in under 19 level still stands. Mm. So in that respect, no one yet has done what he's done. But there's lots of guys who've been very close to Bolt who haven't gone on to even make a World or Olympic final, never mind win many of them. So it is imprecise to try and it's imperfect, but whoever is going to do what Bolt is doing is not going to come from nowhere.
Mm.
They're going to have to go through the same journey that he did, and they'll be in that system. But you wouldn't put anyone's house on them.
I guess also Bolt's performance as a you know, the very best on at the world stage, if you start looking back at his career, maybe it is a form of a measure to see where you are. Now, if you're a young sprinter and you're running close to, and let's say your young sprinter does break, it runs faster than Bolt did as an 18, 19 year old, maybe there's a sign there that, hang, this guy's got potential, maybe this could be the next Bolt. I mean, is it a way to almost set a mark as where you should be, like the sort of the Bolt, the Bolt meter?
Yes, but it's not a shadow you would want to be in as a youngster. And in Jamaica's, that's one of the challenges that any youth system has when they've achieved success, is how you leverage that to future success without suffocating it. Because if you go to those junior champs, and there's footage of this on the internet that you can find, they are the biggest sports event in Jamaica. It's a 3-day-long thing, and it's packed. It's 30,000-40,000 people a day. And the big events are the hundreds. And Bolt and Powell and all the guys are there giving the medals out. And if you win that 100, you're the next Bolt.
Yeah.
So every year there's a next Bolt.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been a next Bolt. Yeah. And so that's a heavy burden to carry. So it's difficult. So yes, there's a measure there, but you wouldn't want, it's not one you would want. You know what I mean? Like it's tricky.
Yeah. Just this is a bit of a layman's question, I guess, in many ways. There's always discussion. I mean, Bolt came on the scene, he broke the world record, he's run the fastest 100 meters of all time. The discussion is, how fast can humans potentially go? You know, you look at the marathon that they've attempted to break a couple of months ago, where they ran around a track and they had a big car in front of them and they had pace setters and they created all this sort of artificial support around the athletes, and they still didn't break the 2-hour mark. Imagine doing that in 100 meters. You have a board ahead of you that breaks the wind for you. Maybe you have a slight a tailwind. You know, what would it take? And is it possible to start looking at performances in the 100 meters and comparing themselves to Bolt and saying, could Bolt's time, he had the highest speed of a 100 meter athlete, but high speed doesn't always make the difference in terms of breaking a world record for the 100 meters. Am I right?
Yeah, because obviously there's different phases of the 100, and top end phase is then followed by deceleration phase. So you can be the fastest there and then you slow down too much, or you can take too long to get to your top speed too slowly. So there's, they talk about there being five phases. There's the reaction time, then there's the acceleration, the drive phase, the top phase, and so forth. If you take, and I've seen people do this, if you take the fastest 10-meter intervals ever measured, and you make a composite run of what it would look like, I think, and again, I stand corrected, but it's faster than 9.5. Okay. It's in the 9.4s.
Yeah.
For some, I think it's about 9.46, 9.48. The fastest ever reaction, the fastest ever first 10, the fastest ever second 10, all by different people. Now, okay, the fastest ever 30 from 40 to 70 is all Bolt in one race, for instance.
Yeah.
But maybe from 80 to 90 is Carl Lewis. Maybe from 0 to 10 was Bruni Suren. Who knows, right? Yeah. So that's one theoretical limit, is if you could optimize every single 10-meter interval, you'd run 9.4 something.
Okay.
The other funky method I saw was
idea, anything close to 9 seconds dead is almost impossible.
It's long way away. So but you'd never say impossible because the context of sport could change. Maybe Mondo in 30-40 years' time will look outdated. Maybe Mondo tracks will look archaic in the same way that cinder tracks do now. Maybe shoes evolve. I doubt it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's one of the things I like most about our sport is that it's not like swimming, where a swimsuit suddenly turns you into a world beater.
Yeah.
It's not like tennis, where Laver wouldn't hold a candle to a Federer simply because of the racket.
Yeah.
So it's nice like that. But that's So the context can change. There are other things that might change. Doping changes the context. And that's the reality, is that doping can move performances. And that's why, again, we're not going to harp on this, but Bolt's legacy is... That has to factor in there. Because when you look at the top 30 times in history and the top 10, 15 athletes ever, there's one guy who hasn't failed a test. Mm. All the others, there's a line through them, you know? Yeah. Something doing the rounds, it's a screen grab of that. And there's a red line through every single name except for Bolt. Now, someone tweets that the other day and says, of the top 30 times in history, only Bolt's not failed drugs test. Mm. And what's really interesting about that to me is that everyone thinks that it's evidence for their position. Mm. So in other words, those who believe Bolt to be doping say that's evidence that he's doping, because how can he be that much an outlier?
Yeah.
And that's a valid question.
Yeah.
Those who believe Bolt is clean say that's evidence for what an extreme outlier Bolt is naturally.
Yeah.
So it's one of those like really interesting things where the same set of information means completely different things to people depending on their perspective, which is interesting.
So in other words, in a perfect race where a Bolt was had a perfect start, better than anybody else, great reactions.
Mm.
It is very feasible to say that Bolt's record, even with in the next 5 years, could potentially go with somebody who runs the perfect 100 meters.
Yes, and also, one of the most interesting analyses I ever saw was a comparative biologist. This is a guy who studies all animals.
Mm.
And he'd looked at the speeds of horses and greyhounds over the years. And the thing about horses and greyhounds is that they are bred specifically for performance.
Mm.
So that takes away the genetic.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're taking the fastest horse and you're trying to find what was it, the genetic difference, right? Mm. So what happened with horses and greyhound performance, the guy's name's Mark Denny, by the way, you can look this up if you're interested, is the speeds get faster and faster and faster. And since the 1970s, they haven't improved. Kentucky Derby, all the greyhound, I don't bet on the races, but the Preakness, the Belmont, the horse events, they've just plateaued. No horse is getting quicker. So he says, well, let's take the mathematical model of what that looked like and apply it to humans.
Mm.
And he works out that in 100 meters, the limit is 9.48. So that's his mathematical method. Now, that's flawed because it's based on assumptions, but that's an example of where the thinking is.
Based on what? That you create a perfect human sprinter?
Based on the fact that history has shown that if you only apply a genetic model, this is where performances will evolve to, and that's what he's done.
Mm.
And of course, you've highlighted exactly the issue, is that it's not just the genetics that make a difference. Mm. So that's, anyway, it's another 9.4. So that seems to be where we're going.
9.4.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll see it in our lifetimes. So we never know. You never know. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about some of the highlights from last night. The 5,000, a big shock. I suppose the story is that Mo Farah didn't win, and the Ethiopians got the better of him.
I know. And we even had a question yesterday from a Peter Karu. He said he thought the Ethiopians could spring a surprise. And I said, I said maybe, but I doubted it. But if it happened, I would acknowledge him. So I tip my hat to you. You picked it. I didn't. In fact, my predictions have been woeful. I don't think I've got a single one.
We're good at reviews.
Yeah, we're good at hindsight.
Yes.
But in our defense, these have been a completely random world champs. Mm. And last night in the five, similarly, was a surprise.
Mm.
Especially because with two laps to go, it looked like we were watching a repeat, because Farah was there at the front with 700 to go. He's just holding the field off and he's doing his usual controlling the race from the lead.
Mm.
And you thought it was going to go the same way. And then he concedes that lead with 450 to go. And that was a surprise, because now he's got two Ethiopians in front of him. Had the American come past at that point, Farah's now fourth, potentially boxed in. Then he's struggling to get a medal.
Mm.
But anyway, they continue. And ultimately, the point is that the Ethiopian who won that was just too fast.
Mm.
He ran 52.5 about for the last 400. And that's faster than Farah's ever finished a 5K in.
Mm.
So people are saying this morning that team tactics did it for Farah and blah, blah, blah. He just got out sprinted.
Yeah, which is not what you would expect it to happen.
No, he
likes that situation.
Exactly. And so is that age... Yeah. Is that the hard 10K a few days before?
Because again,
he's done this five times now, 2011, 12, 13, 15, 16, and now. So in fact, his sixth one.
Mm.
And he's faced the same challenges every time, but he's always managed to withstand them, except yesterday. So exciting last lap. But again, there's no excuses. It's just he just got out sprinted. Because once once a guy's in front of you and he's running 52.5,
you're not going to go around him.
You've got to run 52.1
yeah.
to go around, because you've got to run round and you've got to make up. Mm. So it's so that being in pole position is the way to win those races, and he didn't have it.
Interesting that we, before these world championships started, we were talking about a lot of doubles. We were talking about Bolt doing 100 relay. We were talking about Wout van Aert doing the 200, 400. Mm. We were talking about Mo Farah doing the 10 and the 5. What was the other one I was thinking of briefly? But none of them have worked out, incredibly. No. I mean, we're looking back at this and going, none of those doubles that everybody was talking about actually happened. Caster Semenya, another one, 1500, 800.
So, I was looking at the tables today. There's, so far, there have been four athletes who've got more than one medal individually. It's the ones you've measured. Wade, Mo, Farah, Daphne Skippers and Talu.
Yeah.
So that's in the sprints, right? Yeah. So Wade and three in the sprints, one in the double. Mm. The only one who still has a chance of gold is Ayana from Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. She won the 10 and she'll go in the 5K tonight. Mm-hmm. And It's gonna be an epic 5K
because she's dominant in that 10. Oh.
Because there's a Kenyan called Helen Oberi who could hang on to her and then beat her. So that's gonna be a highlight of tonight. Mm. But she might be the only double gold of these world champs, which is quite interesting.
Interesting. Because I only think if you'd betted your house, or your house on this occasion, we took betting your houses all week. But there was the chances of three or four of those double golds happening were pretty strong. I mean, there would have been some good odds on that.
Yeah, there have been many in the last. I mean, Farah obviously is doing it all the time. Mm. Bolt's done it. Tame Thompson's done it. Fraser Price has done it before. So it's been unusually open. And that's been the case also by country. But that's something we'll discuss in our wrap-up tomorrow.
I suppose abnormal has been the new normal for the World Championship in many ways. 100-meter hurdles last night for women. That was also a bit of a shock. Australian coming through in the end. But again, another one of those surprises.
Yeah, so that the shock there is that Kendra Harrison didn't win it. Mm. In fact, forget about winning; she didn't get a medal. Mm. So she broke the world record last year in London. Mm. A couple of weeks ago, she ran in London Diamond League, runs 12:28, which is 0.2 faster than anyone else. Mm. Now, in 100-meter hurdles, that's an enormous gap. She didn't even win the race. In fact, she was lucky to be in the final because in the semi, she'd hit a hurdle and scraped in by a hundredth of a second. Mm. And what's interesting and ironic is when they introduce the athletes at the start, she's square onto the camera and they're introducing her, and she tapped her head, you know? Mm. It's like, well, in hindsight, you're pointing at the problem. Because she failed to make the Olympic team for the 2016 Games because she couldn't qualify out of what is a very difficult US system. Mm. She didn't make the top three. Okay, so she's fixed that. Now she qualified this year, but she clearly seems to have some issue about when the big pressure comes on in these big races, whether it's the US trials at first and now the world champs. She can't quite produce her best. Mm. She was 12:70 yesterday. Mm. As a 12:20 athlete, that's a massive underperformance.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have an excuse like weight or fatigue or anything like that. Mm. She needs to
work on the head,
figure that out.
I guess at world championship level, that is a major factor, is getting through those. You've got to get through the rounds. There's also, when you've got the expectation of a nation, for many of them, the whole nation's looking at them. It's not easy just to say, well, suddenly you can switch that mental strength on. It's not something you can see. You can criticize her, but it's not easy necessarily just to do that.
Yeah, especially in hurdles, because so much can go wrong. Yeah,
it's exacting.
And even the strongest athlete mentally is, you've got to be absolutely perfect because 1 centimeter in the semi, that's happened. She's this much too low on the first hurdle. She hits it super hard. Mm. The whole race is gone. So that's a tough event to call. And Harrison, for me, it'll be interesting. Like, now they'll go and run the last few Diamond Leagues. Mm. I expect her to go and, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she goes and breaks the world record.
Because the pressure's off.
Because the pressure's gone and now she's just motivated a little bit by other things, but that was an interesting example of withstanding pressure in BMT.
Let's talk a bit about tonight. Quite a lot of highlights tonight. In fact, obviously there's no heats because it is the final day. The men's, the 4x400 meters, lovely events to watch from a purely entertainment perspective.
Yeah, you were saying it's one of your favorites.
Yeah, it really is. Same here. Fantastic. Same, yeah. Purely because you see the way the guys go off. Suddenly, somebody who's got a clear lead, it loses it. You know, it's really incredible to watch.
The best thing about that is you'll see it, and hopefully the races are tight. Because what you don't want is the USA 20 meters ahead after two legs, and then it's everyone's racing and it's boring. Mm. But if they're tight and there's 4 or 5 meters. Mm. Then the guy in second and third has a decision to make when he gets the baton. Mm.
Does he go hard?
Yeah. Do I try and catch this up by 200 or do I measure myself back? Yeah. And the guy in first has a decision to make because he's got to go, how hard? Does he hold that gap? Does he allow him to come back? Mm. So it's poker, right? Mm. It's like game theory in track and field. And John, there was a relay run, I think it was John Regis, used to say he wants the baton either 1 meter behind or 15 meters ahead, not any other position. Because now you're in an awkward spot.
Yeah.
So 400 relays are fun. They're really cool.
You see massive changes. It's quite incredible. So we look forward to those. Yeah. Women's 800, Caster Semenya going for her favorite event. She should be the favorite for the gold. Mm. And the 1500 meters, any chance of it being in her leg still?
There's always a chance, but like in the semi... didn't seem like it. She looked super confident and very comfortable. She paid attention to the early lead. She was there with 200 to go, and then she just does the usual blitz over the last 200. So difficult to see her being beaten, but not impossible, which is different from last year. Last year, that was the surest medal in the Olympics, gold to Caster Semenya. This year, it's a solid chance, but not certain. Neon Saba from Burundi hasn't looked great to me in the heats, but she's been super close to Semenya in the Diamond Leagues. And then Wambui just tactically, yesterday she finished the race with her shoe undone, and she must have run 830 meters instead of her. She's all over the place.
Yeah.
And so she might be beaten by Wilson of the United States, who looks very comfortable in the heats. And so that could be, if there's an upset there, it's Wilson taking a medal away from one of those three.
Yeah.
The question is which one. Yeah. Wambui, I'd say it's a good chance. Neon Saba, maybe. But for me, Semenya gold, and then the others can fight for silver and bronze.
Yeah. Well, we're not counting anything at the moment. Who knows what could happen. Women's 5,000, you made a brief mention of that. Certainly probably the heart event in terms of just being able to watch it and being enthralled by what's going to happen out there. It's going to be an interesting tactical event.
Super intrigued because Alma Zayana won the 10K last weekend, running the last five in 14:24, which I think makes her the seventh fastest ever over 5K at the back of a 10. So you know she's got a lot more in her legs than a 14:24. Part of me was thinking that could be a world record tonight because if Ayane is really aggressive from the start, I think she could run 14:10 by herself. Why would she be aggressive from the start? Because in that race is Helen O'Berry, who's been unbeatable this year. Ayane hasn't run this year, which is why there's all the questions about her.
Yeah.
O'Berry's been unbeaten this year from 1500 all the way to 5. And she's super quick at the finish. So Ayane's best shot is going to be to go hard in that race at some point. Now, I don't think it'll be from the gun, but I would imagine that she'll give it 2 laps, maybe 3, and then you'll see Ayane go to the front. And she'll try to do to that 5K what she did to the 10. And then the question is, can O'Berry stay on her just enough to beat her in the final lap? So that's going to be good.
Yeah,
that's
going to be good. Lots of intrigue, purely because we don't know enough about Ayane to actually judge her performance. Quick question from
this is a good one, and it's come up a few times throughout these championships. Andrina Patterson asks us, with Jamaica, Kenya, Ethiopia, and to a different extent USA, failing to dominate, unlike previous championships, and medals appearing to be spread around many, many more countries, does that suggest drug testing may have some influence? And this whole spread of medals is something we were talking about off the air, as it were, yesterday, and we'll discuss that a lot more tomorrow once the medals have all been assigned, right? But it's an interesting one. The Jamaicans have had a poor championships.
Yeah.
Didn't win the women's relay either last night. The Ethiopians until last night had only had that one women's medalist. So there is some credibility to that hypothesis. And we spoke about this the other day.
Yeah.
In the context of the 200. When was that? That would have been Friday morning. I think if you find our day 8 podcast, Andrina, you'll hear a discussion around that, because that is a plausible hypothesis that the focus on these countries where historically there hasn't been as much testing, and there may have been a little bit of laxity and therefore more scope to dope. Increased focus, your theory would be that slow down. So it would be remiss of us to not acknowledge that could be part of the explanation now.
Yeah, which is a good thing. I think the actual headline was, are we winning the war on doping? Yeah.
Exactly. Now, that's not saying that we must rest on our laurels and say that there is no doping. It could be that it's a question of scale, that the doping used to be there and we've managed to bring it back to here.
Yeah.
And that's good. I'm with you. I think you can't say it's not working just because it's not working 100%. You know, you don't choose to be blind just because someone offers you one eye.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think the other possibility, of course, is, and you can be fooled by this, is that if a few athletes were responsible for the dominance of Jamaica, Kenya, Ethiopia, and they retire, then it looks like something that's actually just coincidence, normal evolution, normal cycle. So we don't know, but if they were getting faster and faster and faster, I'd be sitting here skeptical.
Mm.
So therefore, I'm less skeptical than I would have been.
Last event, one of the big events, men's 1500 meters also tonight.
Oh, yes.
So again, another wide open event in many ways.
It is. I mean, the Olympic champ was dead last in his semi, in his heat, didn't make the semis. Centrovitz of the US, they'd had an injury affected season. The Kenyans are the ones to beat there. They always are. The tricky bit about the 15, it's the same as for all these distance events, is that there's no pacemaker. And running a race tactically, when you're accustomed to sitting in on a pacemaker who's going to get out of your way with 700 to go, it's a completely different challenge. And so the Kenyans in the past have been known to screw it up. So it's interesting to look. So Kiprop is the unmistakable tall skinny jean model who will be at the back, probably in the beginning, in the first couple of laps.
And when we say skinny, he's probably the lankiest athlete I've ever seen. He doesn't seem to have any sort of muscle structure on his legs.
No, he looks like one of those string puppets who's been made out of proportion, and that someone's controlling him from the top, because he's just all femurs.
Yes.
From his hip to his knee, you've never seen such a long bone.
He should be in the BFG book.
Yeah, it's crazy. And he lopes along. But so he's won these races before. So when I say they mess it up tactically, they do sometimes, but he's shown the ability to win these tactical races.
And he's got a finishing kick. That's what's amazing about him, because he doesn't look like he should have a finishing kick.
No, but he's got unbelievable. But the question for him is, he's had a slower season than before.
Yeah.
He didn't look in particularly good shape coming in. He's looked good in the in London. The question is whether he's able to reproduce it for a third time now. And then the world leaders are Cheruiyot and Menangwe of Kenya. They've been the fastest on the Diamond League circuit and look good. But if they go out slowly in 58, 59 for the first lap, and if they're outside 2 minutes at 800, then there are Norwegians and Germans and Polish, and there's all sorts of things can happen.
Yeah.
So that's good fun, the 15.
Stuff happening. I read something the other day. We will talk about this tomorrow. I think it was the guy that won the 110-meter hurdles from Norway. 400-meter hurdles. There we go. They were saying that it's the first medal that the Norway have won in 30 years at a world championships, which is remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, it is an incredible stats. All these countries coming out of the woodwork.
One of the surprises. And they could get another one.
Yeah.
Because they got in Ingebrigtsen. That's a family in Norway who've produced their best 1500. They've got a 16-year-old brother who ran a sub-4-minute mile this year, youngest guy ever to go under four. But he's not in that 15, but the middle brother is, and he's quick. So Norway could well have another. Well,
last time I can think of a Norwegian athlete was Ingrid Christensen, who was, you know, at her best in the late 80s.
I thought you were going to tell me about the guy who beat Sepeng in Atlanta.
Oh, yes.
Vebjørn Rodal.
That's right. There we go. Yes.
So
right.
Norway's produced some good.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. There's a great line in that's US series Seinfeld, where they're talking about the New York Marathon. And Jerry Seinfeld says, "I don't watch the marathon because it's only a Kenyan and a Norwegian that will win it." And obviously that program was made in the 80s.
In the 80s.
Because that's all they thought about, was Inge Christensen and Kenyans. That was the only thing that mattered to people in athletics back then. Yeah. Anyway, but great having you along, Ross. It's been a great week. We're going to be back tomorrow with a wrap-up of our heroes, villains, and also the future of world athletics based on what we've seen at these world champs. Let us know what you think about those heroes and villains of the world champs. We're going to give you a bit of an idea of what we're going to be talking about. One of those heroes for me is going to be the mascot. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Ross says that there's a better mascot that he's seen.
Yeah, we're going to have a poll.
We're going to have a poll.
So this one's called Hero the Hedgehog, I think. Is that right?
I think so, but I think he's brilliant.
My vote goes to Berlino from 2009. You YouTube Berlino and YouTube Hero, and we're going to poll tomorrow and see who wins best mascot.
the best. See who's the best. And then we'll talk a little bit about, I think, one of the villains, obviously, the IAAF, are their own worst enemies throughout these World Champs. So we'll analyse why we think they could do a better job for this. But I think also, just to wrap this thing up, one of the facts I heard this morning is that they sold 700,000 tickets for this World Championships, which is the most number of tickets ever sold at the World Championships ever.
It's crazy.
So, you know, if anything can be measured, it's certainly a great, from a marketing perspective, they did a great job in making sure every night feels like a big event.
Even the walk. I mean, okay, the walk's just been... Here comes the leading woman, Yang.
We're watching this live at the moment.
Yang is currently ahead of Ying by about 10 meters. You need to check this out. Is it Ying or Yang?
Well, there we go. I actually tweeted this morning that I hope that they're going to be first and second, but I didn't actually believe that that could happen. So if you're watching us live at the moment, switch on your televisions if you're in South Africa. You can watch, well, anywhere in the world, and you can probably see the women's walk happening at the moment. And we've got Yin and Yang racing for the gold medal. I don't know how they managed to do that. Well, I'm sure the Chinese don't understand why that's so funny.
No, I'm sure they don't. But to your point about London, I mean, like, we're watching this. They're almost 4 hours into this race, and there are people watching them, good spectators. If you can put 50K walk on and have good spectators, you can do anything. So well done, London.
Right, that's all from us for now. We'll be back tomorrow at our normal time of 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. Enjoy the athletics tonight. So 4x400 meter finals, the women's 800, the women's 5,000, and the men's at 1,500. It should be a great night of athletics. From us here, we'll see you tomorrow.
Cheers.